nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Enjoy the show.
So, the last few days, we've been discussing this full quantum model of how you think about devices, and that's what I'd like to continue with today. And so the model we had started with back in September again, that if you want to describe current through a device, well, basic thing you need is the density of states. And in October, what we discussed was how you can get this density of states from a microscopic model. And lots of times, the way you think of devices is the approach you use is the semi-classical approach, which is half classical, half quantum, which is that from Schrodinger equation, that's the quantum part of it, that's what tells you this density of states. That's what tells you where you have states available, at what energies, and where you have gaps and things like that. So it tells you what states are available. And then the rest of it is classical in the sense you now think of electrons as particles that jump around between the available states. And that's how current flows. Comes in, etc. And that works fairly well. Actually, lots of devices, it works quite well. It's just that when you get to really small things, there are various effects that picture won't quite capture, right? And that's what you generally refer to as quantum effects. And this model that I'm now going through, that's the full quantum way of thinking of current flow. And that one will capture things like that. Okay. And in this more general approach, the starting point is this H, the Hamiltonian. That's what describes the energy levels of your channel. I mean, that's the same Hamiltonian which gave you these density of states in the first place. And that's the one thing you need. Next thing you need is these sigmas, which are the connection to the two contacts. So just as in the semi-classical way of thinking, you have a density of states, and then you have to talk about how easily electrons come in and out of this contact and how they come in and out of that contact. Similarly, here you have this sigma 1 and sigma 2, which tell you this connection to the contacts. But unlike the gammas here, there's two things. One is it's a matrix, in principle, just as big as the H. But in practice, of course, we talked about this, that often your electrons are only coming in to the points right around the device at this end. And so usually the only non-zero elements of sigma would be those that go into those points, the ones that are actually connected to the contact. But the other aspect of sigma is that it's a complex number. It's not purely real. And when you look at its imaginary part, or more correctly, its anti-Hermitian part, that's what really corresponds to this gamma 1 and gamma 2, this escape rates, the rates at which electrons go in and out. And if sigma were purely Hermitian, that is, had no non-Hermitian part, like H, then all it would do is just change the H a little bit. You know, this H, its eigenvalues give you the energy levels. And if the sigmas are purely Hermitian, then all it would have done is shifted around those levels somewhat. That's it. But the additional part, this is what kind of brings in the open nature of the system, the fact that electrons go in and out. And that, of course, is a very important part of all non-equilibrium phenomena, and, of course, current flow in particular, is to have this open system with two reservoirs having two different chemical potentials. That's really what drives the flow. So once you have these two basic inputs, H and the sigmas, then the equations that I guess were listed in this last homework, and that's what we've been trying to kind of show you how those equations come from Schrodinger equation. And the basic first thing is the Green's function, which is like something that describes the response of the system. And that is given by EI minus H minus sigma inverse. And when I write just sigma, what I mean is the sum of the two. There's one part of it coming from contact one, one part of it coming from contact two. Add the two, that's what I'm writing here. Okay. Next is this A, which is the spectral function. And that, as I said, is the matrix version of the density of states. Right? And the way you can find it from G is two ways, I guess. One is the IG minus G dagger way. It's a straight. And the other is, you can write it as G gamma G dagger. And one of the things I hope to show you today at some point is that those two are really equivalent. They're actually equal. So if I just have G and I want to calculate A, well, this is the straightforward way. And what I tried to describe to you last day is that why this, how you can understand this quantity as representing the density of states, the local density of states. And the thought was, argument I was going through was something like this, that if G, if you try to calculate G from here, then these H's and sigmas in general are all off non-diagonal things, and you cannot invert it easily. But supposing you think of a representation in which, let's say, this quantity is diagonal. So by the way, in general, what diagonalizes H may not diagonalize sigma, but let's not worry about that issue. Let's say this is diagonal. Now, then what would happen is, in such a representation, this G would have looked like 1 divided by E minus, say, one of the energy levels, wherever that is, epsilon 1, plus, say, I gamma 1 over 2. I don't want to use gamma 1 necessarily, just, you know, some, I'll just write it as eta. So it is something with some broadening, 0, 0, 1 over I'll put a eta 1 and a eta 2 if you like. So something like this, let's say, if you take the G. And the reason I'm able to write it so simply is just that I'm assuming that these things are diagonal. That is, I'm in some representation where these things happen to be diagonal. That's why I can do that. Now, if you do that, then you can also calculate A very easily. And the A would be this minus its complex conjugate. And that, as we discussed last day, it looks something like I think just for the way I have done my notation, I think this would be 2. I think it would be something like this. So this was G, this is A. And this way went through the algebra last day. I'm just writing it down for the moment. And this is the quantity that if you look at it as a function of energy, what it looks like is something with a peak right around epsilon 1, and its width depends on eta 1. And so if etas were really small, for example, then this would have been like a delta function, just what you expect a density of states to look like. So this, as eta tends to 0, becomes 2 pi delta. This, as eta 2 tends to 0, would have given you 2 pi delta. Okay. So what I'm trying to do is kind of rationalize why this expression A does give you the local density of states. That's what I'm trying to explain. We kind of went through this last day. I'm repeating it again, just to be clear, the physical meaning of this. Okay, so then we could write A as, let me write it up here. So I'll have a 2 pi out front someplace, and then delta E minus epsilon 1, delta E minus epsilon 2, 0, 0, times 2 pi. So this is what A will look like in a basis in which this H plus sigma is diagonal. And then you would say, okay, this corresponds to eigenvector number 1. This corresponds to eigenvector number 2. And so what you have is, if we look at the density of states associated with eigenvector number 1, it's a delta function at epsilon 1. And if you look at eigenvector 2, it's a density, it's a delta function around epsilon 2. And if I take the trace, that is, if I add these two, I get the total density of states. That's the total density of states, two levels. That's how you would think of it. Now, question is, what would this matrix look like in our usual representation? Usual representation meaning when, you know, the example we are considering is just a device with two points in it. Let's call it A and B. Just two points, A and B in there. So my question is, how do I find, maybe I'll write small a and small b so that we do not confuse this with the spectral function. I'm just writing two points here, A and B. So how do I turn it back into this other, into this old representation? That's this idea that you multiply by V and V dagger on the two sides. The way you remember it, as I mentioned before, you have to put one matrix here. One matrix here. And there's, of course, a 2 pi with the whole thing. I'll just put the 2 pi out here somewhere. That's separate. Okay. So what I write here is this matrix, E1 and E2, in terms of A and B. So the eigenvector 1, what does it look on site A? What does it look on site B? Eigenvector 2, what does it look on site A? What does it look on site B? Right? And as I'd mentioned before, if you had asked MATLAB to diagonalize this matrix for you, if it said V, D equals Eig some matrix H, say, then this is the one that has all your eigenvalues in it on the diagonal. This V matrix, that's the eigenvector matrix. And that basically is what this matrix is. That's this V matrix. That's what MATLAB would have given you if it asked for it. Okay, so this matrix will look something like, you know, if you look at, say, eigenvector 1 at location A, and this is eigenvector 1 at location B. Similarly, this is eigenvector 2 at location A, eigenvector 2 at location B. So that's what should go here. Now, can you help me with what goes there? So this is like the V matrix. That's the eigenvector matrix. So what goes here? You have V here, this unitary transformations. If this is V, that's a V dagger. And dagger means conjugate transposed. So what's this element? Phi 1 star A. What's this element? Phi 2 star A. In other words, the conjugate transpose, so I take the conjugate of that and put it here. And I take the conjugate of this and put it up there. And phi 2 star B. Now, let's multiply these two matrices first. you know, I have to multiply three of them. So let me multiply two of them first. So can you help me with what goes in here? This times that. Okay, so can you help me with the next one? The 1, 2 element. You know, the general rule for matrix multiplication is rows into columns. So it's this times this plus zero times that. Okay, next, if I want that element, it's like this times that plus zero times this. So I get E minus epsilon 1 phi 1 star B. This one will be this times that. Done this correctly. So that's what you should get when you multiply the two right-hand matrices. And of course, I still have this first one here to multiply out. I'll just write it here so you have it. So now if I multiply these two, I'll get this 2x2 matrix. And I'm particularly interested in the diagonal elements. Remember, those diagonal elements are what give me the local density of states at point A and point B. Right? So can you help me write the, say, the top element of this? So I'm trying to write this one. So that would be like A11. You know, the top one. So I have to multiply this with this and this with that. Right? You know, always rows into columns. So what you get is two terms, delta E minus epsilon 1 times phi 1 A magnitude squared. Phi 1 A times phi 1 star A. And then when I multiply these, it's phi 2 times phi 2 star. So that's like the top element. Remember, after I have done all this full multiplication, I've got this A matrix in my old basis, namely A and B basis. I've got it back into the regular basis. And then what is up here is what I'd interpret as the local density of states at point A. Similarly, if I go there, that's what I'd give me the local density of states at point B. And this is the point I was trying to make, that is one of the important things that comes out of this kind of a calculation is the local density of states. That is, previously when we say density of states, it was like for the whole thing. But you kind of want it here, here, etc., different places. Because that's exactly what you can measure experimentally, and that's what allows you to image the surface. It's this density of states you're imaging, really. And this local density of states at point A and B, and the thing is, this is what will give you the local density of states at A, that's the local density of states at B. Now, the reason I kind of went through this thing is that when you look at this, this makes physical sense. That you can kind of see why this would give you the local density of states at point A. You see, if I had just asked you for density of states, you would have put two delta functions, this one and this one. You say, okay, I got two eigenvalues. One is epsilon 1, one is epsilon 2. And one of them gives me a peak, say, around epsilon 1. Another one gives me a peak at epsilon 2. Right? So you got two delta functions. That makes But what this says is that if you want to find the density of states at point A, then each delta function should be weighted by how big the wave function is at that point for that eigenvalue. You see, because if you had a situation where this eigenvalue, you know, number one, say, is located entirely at point B, you know, so that if you had looked at the eigenvector associated with it, it was all here and nothing here, then what you'd expect is that eigenvalue would contribute nothing to the local density of states here. So in other words, if you really want the local density of states at different points, you have to take this basic density of states that comes from having a level there, and then weight it according to how big the wave function is at the point you're interested in. So you take the eigenvalue number one, weight it according to the wave function, eigenvector one at A. And then you take eigenvalue number two, weight it according to eigenvector two at point A. On the other hand, if you are interested in the local density of states at B, then it would look just like this, but you'd have a phi 1b there. So you'd have things like delta E minus epsilon 1 phi 1b square plus delta epsilon 2 phi 2b square. So when you write your A matrix kind of in this form, then physically you can kind of see why it gives you the local density of states at different points, this and that. Whereas when you write it this way, it's not immediately obvious. On the other hand, if you're just trying to calculate it, then of course this is a whole lot more convenient. Because this means once you have H and sigma, you just write G, take G minus G dagger, you are done. You got the local density of states wherever you want. So for calculation purposes, this is perfect. On the other hand, if you want to understand what you are calculating, then it helps to go through this thing and see what it is. And I guess what I had asked you to do in that second homework problem that was due today was do it both ways. That is, do it from the matrix way, find what is the strength of this and what is the strength of that. And when you look at the local density of states at point A, you might find something like this, let's say. That one of them is bigger than the other. Why? Because this is bigger than that, let's say. Wave function 1 is bigger at point A than wave function 2, for example. And so you have two different heights. But then you compare it with directly by finding the two eigenvectors. You know, there's a 2x2 matrix. You can easily find what these eigenvectors are. And compare it with that and see if you're indeed getting the right thing. So that's important for understanding what you're calculating. On the other hand, once you know this, mechanically, I mean, this is a much faster way to, I mean, this is it. You just have these matrices, one line in MATLAB, and you more or less have it, you see, as far as calculating it is concerned. But as I've often stated in this business, it's like calculating or understanding are kind of two different things. You can easily have a lot of one without the other. Okay. Now, so, the other point I wanted to stress here is that if you look at the off-diagonal term, that is a little harder to understand. Because now what happens is instead of getting phi 1 square or phi 2 square, you will get things like, and if I'm looking at that element, then you're kind of taking this one and multiplying it into this. And so you'll get things like phi 1 A, phi 1 star B. Or phi 2a and phi 2 star b. You'll have things like that, which has to do with the phase relationship between what you have at A and what you have at B. So these actually will be complex quantities, which have no simple physical interpretation as it stands. On the other hand, you realize that if you throw those away, then you cannot transform to any other basis at that point. But as long as you have it, the thing is, you can transform from one basis to another. So you could go back to this basis, and it will be diagonal, and these would be your local density of states in this basis. You could go to any other basis, you'll have the local density of states, etc. On the other hand, if you throw these away, and then you try to transform back, you won't get this matrix anymore. You'll get something else that won't mean much, etc.
have a number of sites at which we are interested in the density of states, and at the same time, we have a number of eigenvalues. So we have this discussion back and forth from the energy basis, let's say, to the real space basis.
The eigenvector basis and the real space basis.
Okay.
Right?
Why can we assume that these spaces have equal size?
Have equal?
Equal dimensionality.
They're equal dimensionality, actually, right? So, AB, this is like a 2 points, 2 by 2, we also got 2 eigenvectors, right? So, the difference is, let me take this off. So, the basis is sort of like this. A and B. And that we all understand, that when you say the wave function at A, it means on the left side of the device, how many electrons do you have? B is right side, very clear. Okay. And in this basis, H might look something like this. That's what H looks like we took in a hydrogen molecule, one hydrogen atom here, one hydrogen atom there, something. Okay, now what we know is that you can always, in fact, let's keep it simple. Let's say the 2 epsilons are even equal. Okay, now what we know is that there are 2 eigenvalues associated with this. One is epsilon plus T, the other is epsilon minus T. Right? And you call one of these the bonding level, one of these the antibonding level. Now, a deeper way of saying this is that, yeah, this is the H matrix in one basis, namely in the AB basis, and this is the H matrix in the bonding antibonding basis, right? So, for example, this could be like, say, the antibonding level, that's the bonding level. Antibonding level, this is the bonding level. Okay? And you could view this as a basis transformation. So now when you have an electron in this state, that really means that doesn't allow you to tell whether the electron is on the left or on the right, because this antibonding level, it kind of looks like, if you looked at its wave function square, it looks equally on both. And when you look at the bonding one, again, it looks equally on both, right? If you look at the wave function square. So supposing I tell you an electron is in the bonding level, well, it means it's half here and half there, really, right? Because the wave function is this one. Okay. So what I am trying to say is that when I looked at A, for example, it's easy to see what it will look like in this basis. Why? Because H is diagonal. And so in this basis, it will look something like this. And that delta then is associated with the antibonding level. That delta is associated with the bonding level. But then I'd still like to know whether the electron, what the probability is of finding the electron on the left or on the right. In the sense that, and these are measurable quantities now, because in principle, one could come in with an STM and look on this side and measure the local density of states on this side. You know, what you do is come in with an STM tip, put a little voltage on it and see how much current you get. And if the density of states here is high around the Fermi energy, then you'd get lots of current. So you can actually measure the local density of states in A and B. So you can actually measure the local density of states in the AB basis directly. That's what an STM would measure. On the other hand, this local density of states in this basis is what's easy to write down. Okay. So this idea of basis transformation, that is again very basic to quantum mechanics. That in quantum mechanics, you're always dealing with these matrices whose diagonal elements have a simple physical meaning. And if there were no off-diagonal elements, then whatever you get from quantum mechanics would be what you'd get from just common sense classical reasoning. There wouldn't be any mysteries there at all. And whereas all this interference wave stuff that comes in, that really comes from off-diagonal things. So here, for example, I said the H looks like this. Now, if you had looked at the gamma, let's say gamma 1, it would have looked the way I took it, it would have looked something like gamma 1 here, 0, 0, 0. So in the AB basis, the H is not diagonal, but the gamma is diagonal, right? It is diagonal here. Now you might say, well, why don't we go to some basis where things are all diagonal? You know, that way we don't have to worry about off-diagonal things and everything would be nice and common sense. Okay, so you could go to this new basis where this one becomes epsilon plus T and epsilon minus T. And that's the bonding antibonding basis. So you think of it as a bonding level and an antibonding level and so on. Good, but whenever you're using these equations or doing whatever you want to do with matrices, all matrices must be in the same basis, of course. So if you have transformed H, you must also transform gamma 1 immediately. So if you have a V dagger HV, if that's what you have done here, you should do V dagger gamma 1 V. Do the same thing here. That way everything would be in the same basis. And the point is that when you do that, you'll find all four are kind of filled up. It's not very diagonal looking anymore. So this got simpler, but this didn't. And a lot of the interesting new stuff that could arise is basically because of this, because everything doesn't become diagonal at the same time. If everything became diagonal, then whatever we have been doing before, it would just go back to the model we had back in September. This won't get you anything new. In short, it'll be almost like you have got a whole bunch of levels, each one's independent, current just goes through each one separately, nothing more to talk about. It's just that when you look at these eigenstates, that's like going to this basis, your H is diagonal, but then the gammas are not diagonal, and that leads to all kinds of other stuff. Yeah.
The formation of gamma 1 is not diagonal. Which is the meaning of this one?
Which one?
The meaning
of gamma 1?
The formation.
That one. Right. This one then is much harder to understand. Like here, as I said, it will be all filled up. You'll have stuff here, something here, and something here. Now, this was the AB basis. This is the antibonding bonding basis. Right? So what that means is when an electron comes in from here, of course, it can get into the bonding level, if you looked at its wave function, would have looked like this. And the antibonding level, if you look at the wave function, it looks like this. You know, and the wave function squared looks like what I had done before. Wave function looks like this. Okay. So now when you come in from here, electron can go into both bonding and antibonding levels, which is why these are both non-zero. But what is more, you also have non-zero things here which are complex numbers. What do those tell you? Well, that kind of tells you that when an electron comes in from here, the amplitude of going into this and the amplitude of going into that, what is the phase relationship between them? That's this additional information out here. And that is hard to write down intuitively and correctly. I mean, right? Which is why whenever you're writing these things, it's always best to write it in a basis where you have no off-diagonal stuff and then transform it wherever you need to. That's much easier. If you try to write this, it's almost guaranteed you'd get something wrong. It's hard to get these things quite right. Okay. Okay. So that's the spectral function, which is the matrix version of the density of states. And that, as I said, if you write it this way, it has a physical meaning, or what is equivalent is to write it this way. And when you write it this way, the nice thing is that it's got two terms in it, like this. G gamma 1 G dagger and G gamma 2 G dagger, and those have a simple physical interpretation, namely G gamma 1 G dagger is the part of your states that you can fill from contact 1. G gamma 2 G dagger is the part that you fill from contact 2. So sometimes people refer to it as partial density of states, as if there's one part that comes in from left, one part that comes in from right, and that then allows you to understand how you get this electron density, which looks like G gamma 1 F1 plus gamma 2 F2 G dagger. And here, looks just like that, except that the part that comes from contact one is weighted according to the Fermi function in contact one. The idea being that if at that energy the Fermi function, say, happens to be zero, then that part of the states won't be filled. Hence, it won't contribute to electron density. Same here, F2 weights that one. And that then gives you the overall thing. And this quantity here, this sometimes is, I'll write as sigma in. So this sort of tells you the input to the thing from the contacts. And it has a part that comes from one, a part that comes from two. And this is the overall input into the contact, into the material. So there's a whole bunch of symbols here, and that's why it's important to be physically clear what each one means. Otherwise, it's very easy to get confused between which is which. So once you have density of states, electron density, then to complete the story, the last thing you then need is the current. I mean, that's what you're often most interested in. And the current, the expression looks something like this. If you want the current at, say, terminal number I, you know, could be terminal 1, could be terminal 2, wherever you want it, then it's equal to trace of and this is a lot like what we had back in September, and that was, if you look back what we had written down in September, it was something like this. Actually, I might have written something like this. And the argument, and there was a Q over H bar in front. And this D is the density of states per unit energy. N was the electron density per unit energy. And this is like the current per unit energy. If you actually wanted the full current, then you have to, of course, integrate over all energy. That part I'm not writing here. And same here. This is current per unit energy. If you really want the current, total current, you have to integrate over energy. That's understood. And you had this Q over H bar here. And the physical interpretation was that this tells you have got a certain electron density inside your device, and the rate at which it wants to escape into terminal I is given by N times gamma I over H bar. That tells you the rate at which it escapes into that contact. So you have N here, and the rate at which it goes out into contact one, that's this term. And what this other term tells you is the rate at which electrons want to come in. And that's why it depends on the Fermi function in contact one. That was the idea. So this is what comes in, this is what goes out, difference is what. And if you look up here, you'll see it's kind of similar. You see the similarity. If you remember that, you know, the gammas are what became the matrices. The density of states is what became the spectral function. Electron density was what became the correlation function. Otherwise, it's exactly similar. Right? Only thing, these were all numbers. Here, these are matrices, and you have to take the trace. You have to sum all the diagonal elements. And you had this Q over H bar here. You have a similar thing here. Only thing is, instead of Q over H bar, you actually have Q over H. And the reason is, again, that same 2 pi. Namely, that A is like density of states times 2 pi. So, you know, this h, of course, is same as 2 pi h bar. So you could say that the a divided by the 2 pi is this d, and gn divided by the 2 pi is that a. That's it. So these are the basic equations. Now, this one, if I had to justify where that equation comes from, again, remember, all of this, we have done this starting from Schrodinger equation. That where do we get these equations from? Well, you start from Schrodinger equation, but the Schrodinger equation as it stands describes electrons in an isolated thing. And then we added the connection to the contacts and the source term and all that, and that's how we got to these equations. Okay? And one would have to do something similar here. That is, again, you'd start from, and for current, you'd actually have to look at the time-dependent Schrodinger equation, which is usually it would be IH bar d psi dt is equal to H psi. That's the usual form. And what did we do to this? We added two things to it. One was the part due to the contacts. Part due to the contacts, the sigma. And then we added a source term. This is like what comes in from the contacts. This is what we had done before in general. Right? Sometimes I start from the time-independent version, in which case it's E psi. And if you go to the time-dependent version, it's this one. Now, for current, we really need the time-dependent version. Yeah.
Is there a possibility to combine these three terms on the right side by changing somehow the potential, or this treatment is not there?
No, ordinarily, I'd say that this part is the usual Schrodinger equation. Now, any Hermitian part in sigma could always be absorbed in H, because H is a Hermitian matrix. But what distinguishes the sigma is the fact that there is some part of it which is non-Hermitian. And that you couldn't quite put into any normal potential. It would have to be a complex potential. And then there's a source term which is like independent of psi. So that kind of distinguishes it again. Okay? So any normal potential would change the H. If you add a complex potential, you could get the sigma. Now, the reason we need the time-dependent version is that whenever you want to calculate current, what you have to do is sort of look at the rate at which the electron density inside wants to change. That is like d dt of psi dagger psi, or psi psi dagger, whichever. Right? So if you want, so what we really need is something like, keep that in mind. So what we really want to calculate is something like I h bar d dt of, let's say, psi dagger psi. Or you could take psi psi dagger, but the point is finally we should take the trace. You know, last day I explained the difference between the two, that the psi is like a n by 1, psi dagger is 1 by n. So when I multiply, I just get a single number, 1 by 1. On the other hand, if I had taken psi psi dagger, I'd have got an n by n matrix. But finally, I just want to know what is the total rate at which probability is changing inside. So if I were to do this, I'd still take its trace anyway. And trace, of course, is the same either way. Trace of AB is the same as trace of BA. So in this case, it wouldn't matter which way you go. But this is what we want. And this you could write as psi dagger times so in order to calculate the current, you kind of need this d dt of that, and that gives you this, you could write it as two parts. Then from the Schrodinger equation, you can replace this and that. So the idea would be, if I take that first term, I would get, so what I'm trying to write is IH bar d dt of psi dagger psi. And then I have psi dagger times IH bar d psi dt, which is whatever I've got here. It will be H psi plus psi dagger sigma psi. I won't bother with all these. Plus psi dagger s. So that is like that first one. Now, then I have to write the second one. And the second one would be like, I have to write something here and then with a psi at the end. So how do I write IH bar d psi dagger dt? I've got IH bar d psi dt. So what I should do is take the Hermitian conjugate of the whole thing. Okay. So what would you get if you took the Hermitian conjugate of the whole thing? Can you help me here? So I've got IH bar d psi dt. I want IH bar d psi dagger dt. So I put a dagger there. Anything else I should change? I becomes minus I. Right? When I'm taking conjugate transpose, any numbers, you have to take complex conjugate. D psi dagger dt. H psi, you have to switch. Psi dagger, H dagger. And H dagger is the same as H, it's Hermitian. Then psi dagger, sigma dagger. And then S dagger. That's it. And this then I can replace in here. So I'll get minus psi dagger H plus psi dagger, sigma dagger plus S dagger. Now you'll notice this first term is psi dagger h psi, and that's also this one, psi dagger h psi. So actually this and this cancel. What that means is if we had started from the ordinary regular Schrodinger equation without all these extra terms, then d dt of psi dagger psi would have been zero. Because you're describing an isolated system, the total probability of electrons inside doesn't change. So as long as you had just a Hermitian h, that would have exactly canceled that. There'll be nothing more. Everything else you're getting is because of the extra stuff. And here you see what you have is psi dagger sigma psi, and here you have psi dagger sigma dagger psi. And those two together will give you something like psi dagger gamma psi. See? And of course, I've got a trace in front. So because I have a trace in front, I can move this around as I want. And I could, for example, make it psi psi dagger. And that then would be Gn. So if you remember the expression for current that I had written down, which is on your homework, and let me just remind you again what I had written before. It had things like trace of gamma I A F I minus trace of gamma I Gn, etc. Now, since we're kind of running out of time, I'm just kind of telling you quickly how this would eventually lead to that. That's what I'm really trying to tell you quickly. And that is, the idea is that this term and this term together with the sigma minus sigma dagger would become a gamma, and the psi psi dagger is what is we defined as Gn, the electron density. So that's how you end up with this term, actually, eventually. That's the basic idea. And this one requires some more discussion, the psi dagger s and the s dagger psi. That's what together would give you that term. Okay? But overall, the point I wanted to stress here is that if you just start from plain Schrodinger equation, without all these extra terms, a connection to the contacts, then there is no current flow. I mean, then d dt of the electron density is just plain zero. Okay? So usually, so what you see in is two approaches. The most common approach is you use Schrodinger equation to figure out your density of states, modes, etc. Tell you in how many lanes you have on your highway. But then you think of electrons as particles that come in from somewhere. So you eventually have to attach the contacts. And what people normally do is they assume there's some density of states and then think of electrons as particles, and that's like they're attaching the contacts, how they come in, how they go out, etc. On the other hand, if you want to connect the contacts at the atomic level into the Schrodinger equation directly, and that's what is kind of needed for the very small devices. There's all kinds of creative things one can do with it, but to understand this, to visualize all this, one needs to have contacts actually at the atomic level. And then I'd say this is kind of what you need to do effectively. You cannot just start from Schrodinger equation. You'd have to put in something here that allows you to attach the contacts. That's the sigmas. And these equations, these are what are called the NEGF equations. These are basically obtained from Schrodinger equation. On the other hand, there's an enormous amount of extra stuff that has gone into it, and that is these contacts. That is this connection to the contacts and how you calculate current from it. So these equations look very different. Starting point, though, is the Schrodinger equation with contacts. Well, let me stop here today, and we'll finish up on Monday.